Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
Spain are the world champions at last.
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:30 in the morning on Saturday morning. Still to come on the program, we have Steve Koulias from That's Hockey Tonight on TSN. We have Mike Greenlay of Fox Sports Net Minnesota. And now we're pleased to welcome back to the show from the Tennessean in Nashville, Tennessee, Joshua Cooper. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you're joining us from Vancouver. Is that right?
That is correct. That's where I'm spending my All-Star break.
Well, we appreciate you giving of your time while you're on vacation.
Josh, have you been to the Roxy yet?
Oh, no worries.
Josh, have you been to the Roxy yet? It's a good club in Vancouver. Anyways.
Ask Shane O'Brien about it. He knows all about it. Josh, let's start with really the never-ending problem seemingly for the Nashville Predators, and that's scoring. Year in, year out, it seems to be an issue. But how disconcerting is it to have Shea Weber as the team leader in points at the All-Star break?
I don't know if it's really disconcerting for them. I just think it's sort of the way they're built. They're built from the back forward. I mean, they have Pekka and goaltender and Shea Weber and Ryan Suter. They're two kind of big horses on defense. Yeah, I think they'd like to have some more scoring, but I think the fact that Weber is scoring and scoring at a pretty decent rate for them is pretty good for them. I think they probably would like to have more scoring from up front, but I think one of the things that you're seeing with them in terms of just their production overall is the fact that some of the guys who have kind of been their big scorers over the last few months didn't really start out that way. A guy like Sergei Koshkitsyn was pretty much a fourth-line player for the first couple months of the season before Barry Trotz moved him up, and that's why his totals are pretty low. And the same with Colin Wilson. Had didn't really have the opportunity to play in a high line until kind of 2 months into the year. So I think that's part of it, but I mean, offense is an issue for them. It always has been, but they are winning games. I think that's sort of the bottom line for the team is the fact they're still able to find ways to win.
With this lack of scoring, do you think that Barry Trotz is going to increase the ice time for Colin Wilson? Because right now he's playing at about 14 minutes a game.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Do you think Colin Wilson's ice time will be increased? Right now, it's about 14 minutes per game.
Losing?
I think there's like a microphone problem. I can't hear.
The question, Josh, was in terms of Colin Wilson. You just mentioned him, and the question is, right now he's at about 14 minutes per game. Does Barry Trotz want to increase that to maybe 16, 17, and is that something he'll do to increase scoring?
I'm not sure. I think part of the reason why he's averaging about 14 minutes a game or so is the fact that he's not playing on the penalty kill. I don't know if increasing his minute total is going to increase the offense. It's just I think it's more the fact that he's not playing on that little segment of special teams right there. He's playing on a line with David Legwand right now, and since Legwand's come back, they've really showed some good chemistry. Mm-hmm. And the offense in the last few games before the break wasn't too great, but before that, I think they had about 10 goals in two games. So it's one of those things where when it catches fire, it's really good, and when it doesn't, it's really bad. I mean, there's really no middle ground, so I think that's one of the key things for them. It is just the fact that it has been somewhat inconsistent for them this year.
Yeah, Josh, Shea Weber and Ryan Suter, garner all the headlines, and rightfully so. They're two tremendous defensemen. But how important has Kevin Klein been to the team's success so far, and maybe specifically on the penalty kill?
He's been a pretty steady presence for them. He was playing on the second pairing with Frankie Bouillon mm-hmm. before Bouillon got hurt at the start of the road trip. And he had suffered some inconsistencies earlier in the year, a few ups and downs, and in the last few games, I think he's kind of really studied his game. He and Alex Soldier have actually played really well together. And I think that's really been good for the Predators, just how those two guys have meshed and had to mesh in such a short period of time with Bouillon being out. So, it was kind of a tough going for him at first, but I think that thing really kind of picked up for him recently, and he's been kind of a real steady presence and kind of almost a backbone type player for them back there.
Josh, you mentioned him before as sort of the steadying presence and the straw that stirs the drink of the Nashville Predators, and that's goaltender Pekka Rinne. What has been the main reason, the biggest reason, for his progression as a top-flight NHL goaltender?
Well, yeah, I think that it's just his ability to, like, kind of see what's wrong and then correct those issues. And having a guy like Mitch Korn as a goaltending coach to really steer him in the right direction. Earlier in the year, Rene was having a lot of trouble with his angles and kind of identified that as an issue and worked hard on it and was able to correct them. And now you're seeing fewer bad angle goals on Pekka-Rinne. Also, the other issue is the fact that he had a knee problem for, I guess, a good chunk of the year and didn't even realize it until after the Columbus game on December 1st when he had his knee scope. So I think that was another issue right there. But I mean, he's been tremendous for the team. And one of the things you watch, it's really interesting, is he has a really good glove hand. And he sometimes overcompensates with it, but it works really well for him because it's able to really smother a lot of rebound and second chances. I was talking to Barry Trotz a couple weeks ago just about Rene, and he said that Pekka is pretty much able to, with what he's able to do in terms of just kind of stuffing those chances, like when someone shoots the puck and not allowing a lot of rebounds, he pretty much prevents about 10 extra shots a game. So he's playing really well for them, and you mentioned the word backbone, and he has been that for them. He's pretty much been their MVP this entire month.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined on the line by Joshua Cooper from the Tennessean newspaper in Nashville.
Josh, the Nashville Power Play is bottom five in the NHL, right? And do you think that's a product of the lack of top-level offensive talent on the team, or is that somewhat systematic?
I think that it's a little bit of both, but it seems like right now, especially with the injuries, they're just trying to kind of piecemeal together the power play. I mean, I'm sort of watching the most recent power play, and I think it was in the second unit they had Joel Ward, who's a very good player and a very good two-way player, mm-hmm. but not exactly power play material, and they have a guy like J.P. Dumont who plays very small minutes for them right now. Granted, he's had a lot of success in the past, but I mean, he's pretty much just become a power play guy for them. And you got guys who aren't playing a lot of minutes, guys who aren't really used to power play minutes on the power play. And I think it's just the injuries and the lack of sort of quality upfront personnel or scoring personnel that they have. And I think that's a major issue. I mean, in the Vancouver game, I think they had five power plays or something like that, and maybe four through the first two periods. And couldn't score. And if they had scored at least one goal, I think it would have done a pretty good job in terms of setting themselves up a little bit better to get a point out of that game. They still got the first goal in that game, but maybe getting one in the power play could have deflated Vancouver a little bit more. So it's one of those things where it hasn't really been too much of an issue so far just because they played so well defensively. But we've seen in the past how it's just really kind of bit them and hurt them. And it looks like it could happen that way again, the way it's been going.
Josh, conversely, Nashville's PK is top five. And, you know, if the team is bottom five in the league in block shots, what is the main reason for the success?
It's just a bunch of guys that kind of, I hate to use the word buy in because that's sort of a coach, that's sort of coach speak right there. But, it really kind of seems that they just play really well together as one unit. And one guy who's really kind of stepped up and solidified that is Nick Spaulding. He was called up earlier in the year because of injuries when Matthew Lombardi went down. And it's really just it's really interesting to watch him on the penalty kill and how much better the penalty kill is with him out there and with him in the lineup just because he's such a good glue guy for them. And, they just all kind of play within their system. And, you always say your best penalty killer is your goaltender. And that's Pekka-Rinne, and he's been tremendous for them.
Last question, Josh. Trade deadline's coming up in about a month. What, if anything, is David Poile looking to add? And, they have $9 million in cap space, but is money an issue?
Money's an issue just because it's the way the team operates. Cap space is sort of, it is what it is for them. It more has to do with whether they can pay these guys and be profitable. And that's why even though they have $9 million in cap space, I don't know if that really kind of bodes for them adding some pieces. In talking to Poile, he's constantly harped on the offense and how the offense has to get better. And I see him maybe doing a couple creative moves to maybe boost the offense, sort of along the Marks Vatos line where he added him off waivers after St. Louis signed them. But I don't really see him doing anything too big. But if they're really in the thick of things like they are right now, and let's say they're fighting for the division championship against Detroit. I mean, they're going to need someone else to really kind of boost this, maybe a real difference maker up front. And they have a lot of the pieces on defense in the minor league system. So it'll be interesting to see if they do something. I think if they do anything, it'll be on offense. But, you never know with David Poile.
Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean newspaper, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
No worries. My pleasure, guys.
Thanks, enjoy your vacation. Thanks, Josh. Let's go to break. When we come back, Mike Greenlay from Fox Sports Net Minnesota. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Josh Cooper of the Tennessean for joining us this last segment. Now we're pleased to welcome to the program color commentator for the Minnesota Wild from Fox Sports Net Minnesota, Mike Greenlay. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
How you doing?
Very well. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Mike, let's start with the Wild, home record. This is a team that sort of exceeded expectations, at least the expectations we had coming into the season. How much better would this team be? Would they be in a playoff spot right now if they could improve on that home record of 11-11-2?
Yeah, without question. I mean, the Wild last year tied a franchise record with 25 home wins. And if we could finish this year with 25 wins, I guarantee you they'd be in the top eight. And it's kind of odd because really what they've done from this year to last year is that last year their road record was abominable, and then this year they have a winning record on the road and 500 at home, or well, I guess as close to 500 as you could call it. It's a little bit of a mystery actually, and we don't know why. They've gotten great support at XL Energy Center this year, and it's just an interesting turn of events. But there's still a lot of season left, and obviously the last couple months here are going to be very important, both home and road. So hopefully they can win a few more games at home and have a winning record on both fronts.
Mike, Mikko Koivu, didn't get named to the All-Star team, but I guess that goes along with kind of the player that he is. In my opinion, I think he's one of the most underappreciated players in the National Hockey League for all he brings to the table. Do you agree with that, and can you maybe elaborate on that a bit?
Yeah, he is. I mean, typically when you get a responsible player, a what they call a 200-foot player, a guy that skates just as hard in his own end as he does in the offensive end, that type of player often is overlooked for any type of flashiness or abilities that would necessarily put him up in the All-Star ranks because unselfish players like Mikko Koivu make everyone else look pretty good. And so, but, you know, I guess for the people that do watch him a lot and the people that do recognize that, I think they understand that this guy has great team value, and that's what the Wild did when they extended his contract and gave him a whole boatload of money, because they realized that this guy is the kind of cornerstone that you want to build a franchise around, because he brings the energy and he brings the compete level that you need every night. And so certainly no underappreciation in the Minnesota area, and even in the Northwest Division for the most part, because everyone who faces him on a regular basis knows what Mikko Koivu can bring. But, and having said that, though, he's not, even though he's up there in points, it's funny. When you look at Mikko Koivu, you know he's got another gear. You know he's got another level, and he just hasn't hit it yet this year. But that's not saying he's not having a good year. That's just saying that how deep a talent he is, that he hasn't hit his stride, in my view, yet this season. He's still not having Mikko Koivu type performances from a team perspective. I mean, yeah, he's doing a lot himself, but last year it even seemed like he was able to throw the team on his back and carry him a lot more on an individual basis. And maybe that's a fact that the team's maybe a little bit deeper this year. But I think Miko's got another gear, and I think once the All-Star break's over and the games become even more meaningful, I think you're going to see Mikko Koivu take that next step. At least we hope he does.
One of the greatest stories was that, as far as the Minnesota Wild go, and the All-Star game goes, is Brent Burns' inclusion in the All-Star game. What do you attribute his, comeback year to?
You know,
bounce back year.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I understand what you mean on that because, you know, he ran into a bevy of injuries and everything last year. And I think what really hurt him last year was the fact that the summer before he wasn't able to really work out like he, no, he's a fiend when he works out. I mean, this is a guy who does, he does mixed martial arts as a training regimen. I mean, he's a cyclist, so he does a lot of biking in the summertime. He's just a very active guy. And, you know, the summer before he was with the, you know, with the head issues and with a couple other issues, he wasn't able to train like he typically trains. So he comes into the season and gets rocked one more time, and that didn't help him near the beginning of the season. That gave him a setback. And so he was basically climbing uphill all season last year. And, you know, and then when he did start to feel better, he, you know, it was almost like he was trying to make up for lost time, and he pushed too hard, and he tried to do too much. And whenever he does that, like any good player, even the good players, when they push too hard, sometimes they falter more because they're not letting the game happen. They're trying to create stuff too much. This year, totally different scenario. He comes in, and, you know, he's in great shape. He had the whole summer to work out the way he wanted to. You know, and he basically, you know, all he did this year was pick up from where he left off before he got injured. And immediately, and, you know, you recall Brent Burns being the talk of the town for, you know, maybe an Olympic spot and all this kind of stuff. And that was obviously before he had the trouble injury-wise. But I just think the All-Star year and the way he's playing this year is really just him picking up where he left off. I don't even look at it as a bounce back year because really I think this is where he would have been last year had he not gotten hurt.
Many in the Minnesota, you know, in the state of Minnesota, the state of hockey, and many in the Minnesota Wild organization were very excited about Cam Barker's acquisition last season. It just that hasn't seemed to translate that well on the ice. What's holding Barker back? Why has it not really been the shrewd move that everybody thought it was going to be?
Yeah, you know what? I was with you there. I was like, man, this guy's you know, this guy's got some definitely got some upward potential. In my view, there's two things. One is he's not as speedy as you'd like to see him. You know, he's not fleet of foot by any means. He's not a fast defenseman, but you know, plenty of defensemen make up for that in their ability to move the puck and heads up and creative and all that kind of stuff. But that's one thing. I don't think that's the big issue. I think the big issue, honestly, is just he's not an overly emotional guy. I mean, he's got a really man. I don't know. He's kind of got a goaltender's you know, philosophy of just kind of an even keel kind of guy. And I don't know. I think as a goaltender, terrific to have a really what they call a flatliner type of attitude where not much bugs you, not much riles you up. You know, you play really well. That doesn't get you too fired up. I mean, they stay on even keel. But for a defenseman or a forward, I think they got to play with emotion. They got to play with tenacity. They got to be, you know, they got to get angry. You know, those kind of guys, I think, have, especially a defenseman, I think. And Cam Barker just doesn't have that kind of emotion on his sleeve. I mean, he may feel it. He doesn't show it, though. And I think every once in a while when he does get, you know, when he gets sat or if he gets, you know, healthy scratch or you know, if someone roughs him up in the early part of a game, my goodness, he's a bear, and it's great. I mean, he's got all the attributes. He's got a good physique for a defenseman. He's solid. I mean, this guy's like a tree trunk, so he's built really solid. He's not, you know, he doesn't lack in any areas of strength. He's got good creativity when he plays heads up. When he's physical, he's tough to manage, and he's got a bomb for a shot. I mean, this guy, he doesn't shoot the puck enough, but if Cam Barker would shoot the puck more, he'd have more goals because he just has a really heavy shot. And, you know, all those attributes, you hate to look at it and say, man, this is being wasted because he doesn't bring the emotion out every game. But, I mean, from what I see, that might be one of his problems. And I don't know how you light a fire under a guy that just is kind of a flatliner in terms of his emotions. And I think the other thing, too, is, you know, he's making $3 million, and everyone looks and says, well, why isn't he playing like a $3 million guy? Well, you recall that, you know, he was given a pretty good contract because the Blackhawks erred in his contract a couple years back there, and they basically were forced to give him more than maybe he was worth at the time. Mm-hmm. just because they would have lost him otherwise. And I can't remember the entire scenario, but I'm sure you recall that they forgot to sign him. You know,
it was the contract and the bad fax machine and everything else along those lines.
Also in that, yeah,
yeah. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Mike Greenlay of Fox Sportsnet, Minnesota.
Mike, earlier in the year when the Wild wasn't playing that well, Todd Richards' job was rumored to be in jeopardy. And sometimes, you know, at that point, some outside the organization were saying, well, you know, this team, at least from the outside, didn't seem, you know, the expectations weren't that high. Are the expectations internally different than they are externally?
The expectations were extraordinarily high, actually. It's quite the opposite. Trust me, owner Craig Leopold is, you know, I certainly don't want to call him impatient, but he wants something to happen now. I mean, I don't know if you can correctly call that impatience, because, you know, he understands that, you know, there's certain windows to do things with certain players, and you know, he's a big fan, and he wants to be very aggressive about having his team win now. And win every year, because he sees a lot of teams that are able to do that, you know, like Detroit and San Jose and teams like that seem to be in it every year. And he wants that. And so his expectations are there, and he said it right from the beginning of this year. So it's interesting to hear that that hasn't transposed over to what other people are looking at, because there is a really high pressure, you know, to win here. And so I guess, you know, those expectations sometimes can be a little weighty if you don't win right away, you know. So I think Todd Richards handled himself really well. I mean, he was, you know, a lot of guys would have folded when the team lost a few games, and all of a sudden people are calling, not necessarily calling for his job, but saying, hey, this guy could be in jeopardy. So, you know, and now the team's playing the way that Todd wants them to play, and there, you know, you haven't heard even a blip of anything like that in the 2 months or so. It's interesting how a few wins can calm everybody down.
What do you think GM Chuck Fletcher is looking to do at the trade deadline?
Well, you know, and as everyone knows, it's tough to make moves at the deadline, obviously because of cap reasons, and obviously because of the fact that if you're going to get something, you got to give up prospects these days or draft picks. And those are things that, you know, when you're a team that like the Wild, who need to kind of fill the cupboards again, it's tough to really dole out too much of that kind of stuff. And I think Chuck Fletcher is what I think he's initially looking at is saying, all right, we've got Marek Shidlicky, who is out with a shoulder injury, but we're not going to have him operated on it just yet. We're going to see how far he can come to healing. And if he can finish the season, then get stuff taken care of in the summertime. So if Shidlicky looks like he can come back and play well around deadline or just past the deadline time, well, then, boom, there you get what could be considered a free agent technically, because he hasn't been with the team for a few weeks now because of his injury. And the same thing with Guillaume Latendresse. If Latendresse, by deadline time, is skating and maybe looking like he could be back in a week or two, boom, there's another guy that, you know, from the perspective of this season, could be considered like getting a free agent or getting a big trade, because, you know, there's two guys that have been out for a while, especially Latendresse. So right there, you add that, both that depth up front and back on your team. As far as actually making any big deals, it's kind of tough to say, because the Wild have a little bit of cap space. I don't know if the issue is so much that as it is, you know, they're hosting the draft this summer down here in Minnesota. They have a first-round pick. They have nothing in the second round. And I don't think they want to dish away all their top picks for anything, because you're hosting the draft. The last thing you want to do is start your day the second day or something,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ifs and buts, but, you know, I think the big key is if we can get Latendresse and Shidlicky playing sometime in early March, or, you know, that would be huge for this team.
Final question, Mike. You know, there's been a lot of talk, obviously, around the National Hockey League about Sidney Crosby's concussion. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, concussions and the effect that it's had on Pierre-Marc Bouchard's career?
Well, you know, obviously he was out for just over a year there, and when he came back, it was a great shot in the arm for this team. And he's played really well. I think he's played really well. He's meshed well Initially with Brodziak and Havlat on that line, and now he's moved to a line with Cullen and Nystrom periodically. And so, you know, just anywhere he plays, he brings that skill level. And so, yeah, head injuries, I tell you what, you know, I remember the hit that he took, and, you know, he just, sometimes, you know, and his was, you know, he got run over. But, you know, some guys, it doesn't take that. Sometimes it just takes a little elbow, or sometimes it takes a shoulder to the head, or, you know, just a, you know, type of hit. Even, you know, you watch both hits that Crosby took, and, you know, everyone debates whether one or the other was the one, or whether they both were the one that, you know, kind of, you know, set him out. But I think the first hit in the outdoor game was a lot worse than the one that he took. But, you know, sometimes you take a bad hit, and then the next time it doesn't take much to really, you know, make the problem worse. So I think it's good that the NHL is, because, you know, guy, let's face it, guys are faster now, and they're looking for the big hit now. And, you know, I think the blindside hits, it's good to get rid of them. You don't want let's talk about this. They're trying to sell the game to the United States. They're trying to sell the game to Europe. They're trying to get, you know, make it obviously a very popular sport in every country. And if you're going to knock your top players out because guys are careless, then you're going to have to sell in your game. So I think it's very important that we address it while at the same time trying to keep the competitive level that hockey is, because let's face it, it's a contact sport. As long as guys aren't targeting the head, I think you can make plenty of good hits. Hey, bring back the hip check. I haven't seen a hip check in about 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
Since Brian, you know what I mean? Since Brian Marchment was patrolling the
blue
line.
Yeah. Rob Blake. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you just don't, I mean, and you know, I'm kind of joking, but I mean, it's like you can make good hits, you can make good contact without, you know, popping a guy in the head. And so, you know, hopefully this kind of keeps feeding itself, and they keep trying to find, you know, a happy medium between, you know, keeping the competitive physical level and also protecting guys from getting knocked out for 2, 3, 4 months or even a year.
I couldn't have said it better ourselves. Mike Greenlay from Fox Sportsnet, Minnesota, color commentator for the Minnesota Wild. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Absolutely, guys. Good talking to you.
Take care. Let's go to break. When we come back, it's time for On the Beat. One final hour is still to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our guests so far this week from the Tennessean newspaper, Joshua Cooper, and from Fox Sportsnet Minnesota, Mike Greenlay. Still to come, Steve Koulias from That's Hockey Tonight. Now it's time for On the Beat.
On the Beat.
Ezzy, you started off on the beat, sent over this article.
Ezzy, where did you find this article?
You actually are throwing you under the bus.
Right under the bus.
You knew it. That was
your girlfriend's been away for a little while. I understand what was going on.
You opened a little bit of a magazine.
Yeah. Were you just reading it for the articles? Is that it?
Okay. I found out about this article via Bob Duff, who we had on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
From the Windsor Star.
Right. We had him on when we were on Kick.
Yeah.
He linked this article on his Twitter page because he's in it.
Oh.
And it's in Playboy.
It's from Playboy magazine.
Yeah, and you wouldn't expect there to be hockey articles or articles, period, in Playboy, but this is a really good article. It's called The Berserker of Hockey Town. It's about Bob Probert. You know, it's a bit of a long article, but it's really good. What I really like about
they need some content in there.
Yeah, they have to have some articles, right? Like Penthouse Letters, but no.
It's Penthouse Forum, Ezzy. Penthouse Forum.
You know, just because this article's in Playboy, I mean,
exactly
this,
right.
It's still a very good article.
It's still a very good article, and it's a hockey article, and that's what we're doing here with On the Beat. So, this article is good, and what's kind of neat about this article is, it's not kind of written in your traditional sense. Basically, what the article is they have, you know, Bob Duff, who we mentioned, who's a writer for the Windsor Star. It's basically kind of
he's
like,
not the author of the article, though. It's important. Kevin Cook is the author.
Kevin Cook is the author, but you know, obviously Bob Duff has covered the Detroit Red Wings, and Bob Probert spent his most productive years in Detroit.
Yes. It's an article, it's an article about the life and times, and of course, I mean, Bob Probert passed away, I believe it was last year, very untimely.
Last summer.
It's an article about the life and times of Bob Probert, and it's very interesting because it sort of gives you insight into, you know, how difficult it is to be, you know, a quote-unquote enforcer. I don't know if it's coincidence or if it's just the way it is, but it seems like a lot of the players who end up having substance abuse problems tend to be the enforcers. I mean, Joey Koser, John Kordick.
It's very true. It's very true. I mean, some don't, but it's a hard life. Even if you watch, you know, when you watch 24/7, you just see these guys,
Matt Hendricks,
Bruce Boudreau telling him, take a couple of days, don't fight every game. It is it's a tough way to make a living, and you know, you have to get on a certain high, I guess, to be able to do it. And sometimes that translates to getting certain highs off the ice, unfortunately, and that's hard to separate the two of them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there is in all walks of society, but there's been a litany of NHL players who've had their battles with substance abuse. I mean, we remember the downfall, really, of Kevin Stevens. He's a good one too. Not a good one, obviously. It almost seemed like, I have no evidence of this, but remember, I mean, everybody remembers when he took that big hit. I can't remember who hit him. And he was knocked unconscious on the hit, and he couldn't protect himself when he fell on the ice. And remember, he fell face first and really shattered his face?
Yes.
I think it was the playoffs, when he was on Pittsburgh still.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this is Kevin Stevens, a guy who counts among his good friends. You know, Wayne Gretzky from their time in Los Angeles,
and
Mario Lemieux.
And together in the Rangers as well.
That's right. And then he was found in, I think it was East St. Louis, Illinois. Like, in really a very, the sketchy towns, you know. With all the, you know, drug paraphernalia and, you know, the other things that come along with heavy drug use. And I mean, you know, this is a very good article by Kevin Cook, you know, about the life and times of Bob Probert.
And obviously, you know, one of the main reasons we recommended this article is because, you know, Bob Probert really did lead a fascinating life, and, you know, unfortunately, he did have problems with substance abuse. What's really good about this article is you have Marty McSorley in there and Ty Domi with anecdotes. And, you know, what I thought was fascinating is all of the pallbearers at his funeral were former NHL tough guys. And,
you know, that's actually a great point, Andy. There's a certain mutual respect.
Absolutely.
You see it now, and some people are like, you know, why do they pat each other on their back after a fight? You know what? It's a mutual respect there that they, you know, you understand the plight of the other person on the other side. You understand what they're going through, and you can relate to them. And as much as you might do it for whatever reason, sometimes there is anger and sometimes hatred. But I think even beneath all of that, there's an inherent respect in, you know, what they have to do, you know, to each other, essentially. And that's a great point, Nezzy. I think that's well taken.
Remus on www.illegalcurve.com in the art chat has pulled up that Kevin Stevens clip, and I think based on the tenor of the conversation so far in this show, it's interesting to note it wasn't a headshot. It was a clean body check. He just happened to get knocked unconscious and couldn't brace himself when he hit the ice.
Yeah, and Drew, he was a 50-goal scorer for Pittsburgh, and he never the same after that. I mean, L.A. and then New York, and he lost speed, and he lost his hands, and he was a shadow of his former self. He was traded for Luke Robitaille.
That's right.
People always wanted to get the old Kevin Stevens back, and they weren't able to play in Boston, too, didn't he?
It was a huge hit. He played in Boston, that's right. Yeah. 1993 playoff game against the New York Islanders, and it's just
never the same after it.
It's a clean, open ice hit. Both guys almost... It's not even that Stevens
hit. Islanders? The Pilon?
It looks like it was Pilon. I'm trying to read the guy's
name. He's one of the dirtiest players of his time.
It wasn't a dirty hit. They both sort of hit each other. Pilon went down also. Like, it was almost like they just two trains hitting each other, and he just happened to
47?
Fall face first. 47. Nicely done, Richard.
Not bad.
Moving on in on the beat, Sean Gordon, good friend of this program.
Great friend of this program.
Yeah, the Globe and Mail.
Great writer. A different style than most other writers.
Sort of tongue-in-cheek.
But he's also a storyteller,
Yeah, exactly. Definitely, he crafts a story and see through a journey.
You know, quickly, but as an aside, he has his blog, French Immersion, on the globesports.com website. And even a short blog post, right, he tells a story. And he's never quick to jump to a conclusion. And he backs up what he says. He's a very interesting writer. And we think he's, you know, one of the best out there.
Yeah, and so on that French Immersion blog that Richie mentioned, a story about Matthew Darche's long journey to the NHL. Really, but you know, you don't see it every day, and that's what Sean references in the article. That, you know, first of all, Matthew Darche is in his 11th pro hockey season. Mm-hmm. He's only played 147 NHL games. He was he's a linebacker and a long snapper on his university football team. you know, in CIAU or CIS back then. And it wasn't until the age of 33 that he really became a regular established NHL player.
Right. And I think, you know, I think Darche has to be one of the best stories in one of the best stories in the NHL right now. A guy that, you know, he's so well liked. And, you know, Tim Thomas is another story where he really has hit his peak at an age where...
Persistence, guys. AHL players.
And
that's right. Never giving up, finding their niche, finding their
role. Another one coming from Toronto and coming from a bad area. You're exactly right. Now, those stories should get more attention, shouldn't they?
Yeah. I mean,
well, that's why, you know what, in the last segment, Ezzy, what about Matt Molson? I mean, he had seven, you know, he had been the guy who hadn't gotten a chance. It's good to see. You know.
And it's no fault of his own. It's certainly nothing to be embarrassed about that he found chemistry with a very talented player.
That's right.
Lots of players get the opportunity to play with talented players, but they can't pull it off.
Think about it for Darche, though, guys. Like, the story of all stories, a French player making the Montreal Canadiens.
Played college at McGill, college football at McGill.
33 years old and becoming a regular with the most storied franchise, arguably in all sports.
Yeah. Also with probably one of the best nicknames now, the Darche Vader.
I like it. That's
good. Yeah, I like that. That comes from RDS broadcaster. Where is that? Renaud Lavoie.
Renaud Lavoie.
There's a lot of good nuggets. There's a good little bit of nugget of information in here, too. First off, I didn't know that he was an offensive lineman in college.
Only in Canadian college. But his brother, offensive lineman and play hockey.
Linebacker. But his brother also played in the NFL.
Yeah, J.P. Darche.
That's right. What team?
It was Seattle Seahawks, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah, great little nuggets.
Yeah, obviously.
Chicken McNuggets.
Obviously. Where did you get those Chicken McNuggets from also? You had a Big Mac and now you're eating Chicken McNuggets.
Me and Richie are both vegan now.
Vegan?
Vegan.
What's vegan?
Really? It's like eating vegetables.
I've never heard of vegan before.
Next article. Yeah.
Except for that roast we had last night. We're vegan.
The Drew Mandel roast? That's coming up next year.
That's apparently I'm getting roasted for
at Rumors Comedy
for my
Club,
bachelor party,
yeah.
Right?
We're going to do a roast. Yeah, no joke.
I know. You're very excited. I think you already started writing your
material. I already have a couple of jokes, but I need to make sure they're not.
I have some good I have some good stuff about you also.
Oh, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, and the story of Richard at Laurentian University, that was a good tale that everybody's going to appreciate. You know, we can't tell it on air, though. Dan Robson of the Toronto Star with an article about former NHL players who now coach their kids in various Toronto youth hockey leagues. You know, what I really liked about this article, and you guys can speak to it more so than I can, I've never been privileged enough to coach minor hockey, is how each and every one of the NHLers, first of all, they don't really seem thrilled to participate in the article. They're like, you know, we're coaching our kids. It's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just doing what millions of other hockey dads and hockey moms do across the country. But how each and every one of the NHLers said, we don't want to put that much pressure on the kids.
You just nailed it. Best part of this article, why we picked this article is because, they list all of these former NHLers like Ty Domi, Mike Pekka, a couple of others on there.
Wendell Clark is on there.
That now coach their sons in hockey.
Sons and daughters.
What you don't expect in this article is how the parents, which are former NHLers, are saying that parents these days need to relax.
Yeah.
And it's true because only 0.0001% of all hockey players end up making the NHL. So it's kind of refreshing actually to see someone like Michael Pekka say that, you know, really the most important thing in hockey is the fun aspect. Nobody should play hockey unless they're having fun.
Here's what Tom Fergus, you know, ex of the Toronto Maple Leafs in the 1980s, had to say.
I thought he just was like the ex of Opry.
Okay, well that could be it too. He says that coaching youth hockey has revealed the ugly side of the sport. He loves working with the kids, but parents and politics are another matter, focusing too much on end rewards and not the small steps along the way.
I can echo those sentiments.
Process.
It's about the fun and it's about overall, you know.
NHL teams
don't sweat the wins and the losses as much as some of other people involved.
You know, it's important for parents that are listening. You know, if your kid is 14 and 15 and they're playing, you know, A1, A2, A3, encourage your kids.
Any level, Drew. The best players at AAA generally almost always don't make it.
Okay. I mean, Tim's giving us the sign. We're over time. Let's take a break when we come back. Six things we learned this week. Steve Koulias from That's Hockey Tonight still to come. Lots more. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Shortly past 11:15 this morning, still to come, Steve Koulias of That's Hockey Tonight will be joining us next segment. For now, though, it's time for the six things we learned this week.
Six things we learned this week.
Ezzy, we'll start with you this week. Phoenix Coyotes center Kyle Turris, 21 years old, 2007 third overall pick, is finally coming into his own as an NHL player.
Yeah, and Kyle Turris is a huge part of the Coyotes' short-term future and long-term future. You know, he spent the entire season last year in San Antonio of the AHL and was pretty much, you know, competing in a point-per-game clip. You know, and that was after he basically struggled, you know, in his brief time in his when he was a 19-year-old with Phoenix. But he's starting to come on at the right time. And Phoenix, you know, hasn't fallen off like a lot of people thought they would. But, you know, I think that the fact that he's 21 years old, it, you know, speaks a lot just right there. Because I think when you're, just by being a, you know, top five pick, you're almost expected to come into the NHL as an 18-year-old. And that's just not the case. I mean, Turris as an 18-year-old was playing at the University of Wisconsin, I believe. It was either Wisconsin.
He was Wisconsin. Got to the BCHL and then he went to Wisconsin.
Right, and once again, coming out of the a junior hockey league like that isn't one of the big four, is it meant that he wanted to play here in college. So, I think that you know we for Turris, he's not doing too bad, you know, for his age right now. So, it's nice to see. I'm a fan of Turris. I like his game, and I think that he, you know, it's nice to see. And he's coming around nicely, and that's a big part of why the Phoenix is doing well right now.
Richard, Brent Sutter is actually doing a terrific job coaching the Flames this season, considering the distractions, the lack of scoring, and the poor netminding.
They're not in the playoffs right now, Drew. Yeah, exactly. Look at their roster. There's a lot of guys offensively don't do anything for you. Defensively, I mean, there's some talent there, but and Kipisov hasn't had a good year. But you look at the you know some of the stats, and the truth is, I mean, they could be where I know they're close to the bottom of the standings, but they've been playing well lately. The distraction of Daryl Sutter all year, the expectations, you know, what are they? This is a team that's out shooting the opposition, you know, by about two shots a game. And obviously, you know, you're trailing and you do outshoot your opposition like that, but they're in games battling. They're now 24-21-6. He's doing a good job with what he's got, and he doesn't have much. And the one thing is, they could have packed it in. And maybe the Flames fans want them to pack it in so they can get a good draft pick, but Brent Sutter is a good coach. For all that the controversy that surrounded him, leaving New Jersey, going to Calgary, Daryl Sutter being canned, Jay Feaster would probably be well off to keep Brent Sutter for the foreseeable future. I mean, whether it be through a rebuilding phase or not, and should be, because Brent Sutter has shown and proven at you know in the WHL with Red Deer and then with the World Juniors, he can coach young guys too. He's a good coach. So I think that for all the controversy surrounding him, he is getting more negative attention than positive, and I think that's wrong.
Ezzy, the Los Angeles Kings have to become road warriors in the month of February if they want to have any chance of making the playoffs this season.
Yeah, Drew, and the Kings have a horrible road record right now. They're 10-13 right now, and you know compared to their home record, which is amazing at 17-9 and 1, you know there's a big difference there. The LA Kings, who I believe are in 12th right now, and I picked them to go, by the way, to the Stanley Cup Finals this year.
Another one of your bold predictions.
Right, Tampa's been amazing, and LA can get there if they get, you know.
They start February off with 10 consecutive games on the road.
Crazy.
Okay? These are the teams they play. The Wild, the Oilers, the Flames, the Penguins, the Capitals, the Flyers, the Blue Jackets, the Rangers, the Islanders, and the Ducks. 10 different teams.
Wow.
And, you know, just looking at those teams, they could easily win 6 or 7 of those. So if the Kings have any chance,
they could easily lose 6 or 7
of making
the
playoffs.
Yeah.
If they want to make the playoffs, this is their playoffs right now, pretty much.
Absolutely fair.
So they have to win 7 out of these 10 games.
Absolutely.
Minimum.
Richie, the Tampa Bay Lightning need to add one more defenseman and solid depth forward to make a cup run.
You know what? I like the addition of Rolston. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. This team lacks a little bit of depth. You look at their defense, Kubina, Owen, Hedman, Clark, okay? That's kind of what you got there right now in terms of top guys. Kubina, you know, lacks, in, I think, hockey sense regard and makes some bad decisions. And not the fastest skater, but he has a lot of good attributes, got a good shot from the point, can make a nice pass. Oland, very smart defenseman, you know, lost a bit of a step, but there's a good shutdown defenseman. And you have Hedman and Clark, who are both good skaters. I'd like to see one more good skater in there, one more puck mover and good skater. I mean, obviously, those don't grow on trees, mind you. But one of the sellers, you might want to poach in there and get a guy with a year or two left on his deal who can move the puck, play the fourth role, third role. You're not going to get a top guy. And then, you know, as well, adding another depth forward. I think their fourth line's looking good right now, Tyrell and Hall. But what you want to do is you want to add a piece or two to maybe play with Moore on the third line there. and or a guy who can play on the second line right wing. Well, it depends on where you want to play Malone. But one more depth forward who can play basically third line minutes, and then a guy who can probably play, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 in terms of that role on the defense. And I think in that case, I mean, they dominate their opponents in many of the important categories. So if they can add those two things, I would not want to play Tapa. I wouldn't want to play him now, but I especially wouldn't want to play him in the playoffs.
Ezzy, the media and social media need to stop overhyping nice shootout goals.
Okay, and, you know, just let me explain myself. I realize that, you know, hockey fans, and especially young hockey fans, love the skill component of shootout goals. But I think it's a little too much. We posted Matt Zuccarello's shootout goal on Facebook and our Twitter page, and that's fine, but I think it's just a little bit too much. I think because hockey's a team game, what really matters is how the team plays and how the game was. Obviously, there's some boring games sometimes, so a shootout goal at the end is going to make a boring game interesting. But I think the media, everyone, needs to just calm down a little bit, because if a guy scores in the shootout and it happens to be nifty, that's all it really is. It's as far as I'm concerned, it's an aesthetic thing, really. So I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little bit, you know, negative towards the shootout here, but I think that for me, really, what I want to see is I want to see the team. I want to see, obviously, individual talent on the team is important, but I think we need to just, you know, take it easy a little bit with nifty shootout goals, because really, there's going to be nifty shootout goals every night.
Final thing that we learned this week, Richard, the improvement of the New Jersey Devils is directly attributable to the coaching techniques of Jacques Lemaire and his ability to get the best out of veteran players.
It is. He's really become... he's turned around a team that, the truth be told, the team is done, right? I mean, the team is over. They have no mathematical way of making the playoffs, essentially. And to be able to instill a certain hope and attention to detail and passion when you're basically out of the playoffs shows that you have the ear of the veteran players, and, well, all players, but the team's especially veteran. And they beat Philly recently. They beat Pittsburgh recently. They beat Tampa in back-to-back, you know, home and home recently. Ilya Kovalchuk has committed more to defense while trying the penalty kill. Brian Rolston's reinvigorated. And the truth is, Brian Rolston, a guy who they waived, they could have said, I'm done with this. But Lemaire has the ear. Lemaire's got Brodeur playing better. Lemaire has the team playing as a team. And as he talked about, they had no confidence when he came in. Now they have confidence. And Eddie can speak to this. This is a guy that can still coach about as good as you can get. Now, it might not be exciting. It might not be aesthetically pleasing as, but it's effective. And had he not retired at the end of the year, well, you know, it was a short retirement, but had he not retired at the end of last year, maybe the Devils are first in the division right now. Maybe they have a chance at the Cup.
Hey, Richie, I love Lemaire. I wish he would come back next year. He's already said he's not.
He won't. But who knows? They'll fire their next head coach within 20 games anyways, yeah. and rehire him.
But, Drew, it's unbelievable. Going into the All-Star break, I believe they had the Devils are winners of 6 out of their last 7.
6-3-1 in the last 10.
6-3-1 in their last 10.
They're still the worst team in the NHL.
Exactly.
That's what I mean.
Exactly. That's how bad their start was.
You're going to bring that intensity when you're that bad.
That's right. Okay, let's go to break. When we come back, our last interview segment of the day, Steve Koulias of TSN That's Hockey Tonight will be joining us live from Raleigh, North Carolina. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Exactly 11:30 in the morning, according to this fine computer clock that we have here. We're pleased to welcome to the program now, from TSN That's Hockey Tonight, and live from Raleigh, North Carolina, where he's attending the NHL All-Star Game, Steve Koulias. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
It's great to be on the Illegal Curve. It's a pleasure. I love my friends in Winnipeg, and I'll tell you this right now. You know, it's my personal mission to get some of those American franchises that are dying down there up north. Gary says it's not happening anytime soon, but hopefully those plans change.
I couldn't hear is all I can say to that. Right. Steve, before we get started on sort of the All-Star Game talk and everything else, why don't you tell our listeners about the new show? It starts on Tuesday, where they can find it nightly, and what they should expect from the show.
Well, That's Hockey Tonight. We'll be mostly on TSN, but TSN2. Of course, the idea is to build, the second network. I mean, TSN's got so much great programming, and it's full, and you got SportsCenter on. Basically, games are over until 11:30. So the idea is, kind of having with Off the Record and some other shows to put them on the deuce, and to attract viewers there. TSN has been a staple in Canadian broadcasting since 1984. So we'll start, which is 10 o'clock. The show will run on TSN 2 on the 1st. Which is a perfect time for your audience. And it's going to be very similar to what I was doing before, extended highlight packs, for example. So, you know, most places 45 seconds, a minute on a certain game, but we're going to go, you know, 3-4 minutes we were going in rehearsal to break down, show the replays. Was that offside? Was that a penalty? What happened here? So it's going to be like a mini movie. And then breakdown games, kind of with the focus game of the night, the specialty pack. You know, if we're focusing on the Leafs, we'll really take a look at Kessel. What's wrong with Kessel? Why does he not support the puck the way the Kuhlman, Grabowski, MacArthur line do? That's one of his problems. You know, if you're doing the Canadians, you know, small forwards, what's going to be their problems in the postseason? You know, should they get bigger up front? So extended highlight packs, debates. We're going to bring people in and, you know, we had 10-minute misconduct. We're going to have something called the shootout. You know, three topics, two guys going at it. Matthew Barnaby's on the show. You'll see Keith Jones, Darren Pang. You know, we got a long cast of characters, so that'll be good. And it's going to be go, go, go every single night. And I think that one of the things I'm surprised at, that it took kind of this long to have a nightly hockey show on Canada Sports Leader. Yeah. I mean, I guess I helped start the first one about 10 years ago when we did that, and nobody else did it. So now I think it's about time. It shouldn't have taken this long, but, you know, you asked for it, you got it.
There's certainly a market for in-depth hockey talk, Steve, so we're happy that you're going to be debuting the show on Tuesday. And speaking of markets, you're in Raleigh right now in a non-traditional hockey market. Can you speak to just, you know, how the All-Star Game is being received there right now? Is it getting a lot of attention? Or is there a buzz, or is it just kind of blending in with the North Carolina basketball, Duke, and Wake Forest?
Well, that's a great question, and there is a buzz, and the people around here who are, you know, into it, they're going to be into it wherever it is. They have brought in, you know, people from the surrounding area, you know, people from the northern part of the United States have driven down, come down. You see a lot of fans of other teams, which is great. The Fan Fest went really well yesterday, you know, packed with a buzz. It's exciting, and so that part I'm a little surprised at, which is great, and they've done a great job. They've got outdoor rinks set up here. It's actually around temperatures aren't freezing. So
really?
Wow. Yeah, it's you need a jacket and everything else. Last time I was here was during the final, and my great story is, of course, fans from Edmonton hitchhiking and driving down, getting to the game, you know, recognizing me, saying, "Any tickets to Game 7? And I said, "Look, it's Cooley. It's not Kreskin. I don't know where I'm going to get tickets." And then they went inside, and if you bought season tickets to the Canes 06-07 season, the next year you got two tickets to the Game 7. So people were like, "Oh my God, we're ready to spend so much money," but it was cheaper to buy season tickets. And I'm talking like $500.
Wow.
To buy season. So they were willing to spend $1,000 for one ticket because they drove for Game 7, and they got two tickets for $500, and they got 41 tickets to the next season, which they were nicely donated to, like, charities. And you know, I'm talking about, like, 25-year-old guys who are plumbers, and I'm not talking about, you know, these guys. One guy said he hitchhiked, like, by himself, and he made it all the way down. You know, whether that's true or not, I'm not so sure. But, I mean, so that's the market we're dealing with. You can go to a game here for $12. It's getting better. But, I'm babbling here. But to answer your original question, right now for this weekend, there is a buzz. But, you know, when, you know, the tents come down and everybody leaves and everything else, you know, we're left with what we have here. And it's a market that we target in the north and say, we're not sold.
Steve, has there been a lot of, you know, NHL trade deadline chatter in Raleigh?
There is not, actually.
Really?
There is not. And I don't know if that's disturbing for big deals come the 28th, or whether we're just, you know, that's on the back burner right now. But there's not that trade buzz yet, which, you know what, maybe we need the calendar to switch to February for that to happen, and then when it does, we're set. But as of right now, guys, another good question. But no, there's no buzz, and being around, you know, the elite hockey guys that we've got here, of course, and what people are talking about right now is more the soft core issues. You know, it's more about the All-Star and the draft, the fan, and that kind of stuff. So I think we're going to turn that up a notch once we get into February.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Steve Koulias of TSN. That's Hockey Tonight, live from Raleigh, North Carolina, in the NHL All-Star Game.
Steve, I guess, as you know, WikiLeaks and other things have shown us that, you know, some people can say something and then something different's going on behind the scenes. Gary Bettman obviously spoke about, you know, franchises yesterday and didn't really have much to say in terms of movement. Do you think there's something going on behind the scenes, at least, you know, with all the power players in Raleigh this weekend? Are there some decisions that are going to be made?
Well, I just don't know how it can keep going the way it is, for example, in Atlanta.
Yeah.
I just, sometimes, you got to read between the lines, you know, when you read the newspaper or when people speak. Right. I mean, there's biases. You got to check the facts. I mean, you know, people will say, well, I saw something on TV. The guy on TV said, well, you know, it depends what it is and you know, what spin. Who's, you know, what is it, Fox News? Is it CNN? Is it, you know, CBC? So, you know, it's different. When you're 12, everything's, you know, perfect and right and everybody's good. I just don't see it, how that it's working in Atlanta. I mean, we have court documents now talking about $150 or $130 million loss since 2005. You have a team that's better and exciting and is scoring, and you're still not filling the building. I mean, how long can the losing continue now that the sale is completed and the lawsuits are over? I think that is the target spot number one. And I was just going over the attendance numbers. I think I'm up to seven teams that are under 15,000 fans a game. Wow. Seven. I mean, that's almost a quarter of the league, for gosh sakes. And the Canadian teams are operating at 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%, 100%. And Ottawa's at 97.1.
Wow.
I mean, what, you know, proof's in the pudding here. So I'd like to get behind the scenes and dig a little bit at that kind of stuff. But I think right now, you know, nobody's going to really say the truth. And let's see how the Thrasher thing plays out over the next couple of weeks and months.
Do you think Sidney Crosby's absence from the All-Star game is overshadowing the entire weekend?
It's not. Not from being here yesterday and what happened. Will it tonight? Tonight's different because you're going to have 42 guys on the ice doing their thing.
Right.
Maybe Sunday. I think it would be worse if it was like a ankle injury like before or shoulder. It'd be like, ah, that's too bad. I think right now what the issue is let's hope this is not serious. Like, let's hope legitimately he says it's getting better. I mean, we heard Paul Kariya say the same thing in February 1st when our show starts. It's a famous date in hockey. It's Gary's anniversary when he took over in 93. And it's the date that Gary Suter cross-checked Paul Kariya in the face and changed his career forever. I mean, forever.
Yeah.
And he had like 17 goals in 22 games going into that game. Got his new contract and all that kind of stuff. And I think we've never seen that guy after the cross-check. So I think in this case we're all just worried about Sid and hope that he's okay. And you can't play a game like this and not miss 87. So he will be missed on Sunday.
Speaking of cross-checks and Gary Suter.
Yeah. Steve, you know, we'll let you go on the
I'm still bitter about the Suter cross-check in 91 on Gretzky. That's what I wanted
to
say. That's why people were kind of on him for that kind of thing. But, he was a great player, but two big players that he put down
that's
in
right.
that time.
That's right. And we'll let you go on this last question about Wayne Gretzky. You know, we were talking earlier in the show about how, you know, Gretzky is sort of AWOL from the NHL. You know, since the dispute over who, you know, who owes him money and everything else, with the All-Star game being in a non-traditional hockey market and really Gretzky responsible for the NHL being in non-traditional markets to begin with, how much, you know, how badly does the NHL need to make amends with Wayne Gretzky, no matter, you know, $5 million, $6 million, $7 million, whatever it's going to take to get Gretzky back as front and center with the NHL?
Well, I think it's extremely important. And Wayne, during his 50th birthday celebrations, was talking about everything he owes to the NHL, and you know, basically everything's okay. And I mean, I don't care who you are, you're owed $8 million. You're owed $8 million, and it'd be great to get Wayne back in some way, shape, or form. You know, we can dream about him getting a piece of the Thrashers and bringing them back home as a success story, but I don't know if that's ever going to happen. They got to mend those fences. I think everybody's on the same page with that. I think in due time he'll be back in some capacity. I believe from the people that I've talked to about the subject, who are a lot closer to Wayne than I'll ever be. I mean, really close. The ice is melting in that situation, but I think that what happened, with the gambling allegations and mini scandal to the whole Phoenix, I don't think he's having dinner with Gary Bettman tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be rectified, and Brendan Shanahan being in the league office will help, I think, smooth that over, but it's going to take either some more time or somebody else to kind of step in. Just, again, from reading between the lines, that, the way Phoenix ended and the way the stuff with Gannett a few years ago, I guess 06 during that situation, that's got to get fixed.
Steve Koulias live from All-Star Weekend in Raleigh, North Carolina. Thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and best luck with the new program.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me, guys. And don't forget, 10 o'clock, perfect time for everybody in your listening audience.
We'll tune in. Thanks very much, Steve.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. That's one final segment for the show. We'll go to break, and when we come back, it's time for Rapid Fire. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One final segment on this Saturday morning. It's time for the segment that we know we love. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Staying in Raleigh, North Carolina, on Monday night, the Carolina Hurricanes beat the Toronto Maple Leafs 6-4. Controversy arose during the game when Hurricanes defenseman Tim Gleason fought Leafs winger Nikolai Kuhlman, resulting in Kuhlman suffering a broken nose. After the game, many Leafs players were upset, saying Gleason should not have engaged with Kuhlman because of the discrepancy in fighting experience.
Garbage. I'm cutting it right now. Garbage. You know what, Drew? He punched him like 3 times. What do you want Tim Gleason to do? Keep taking punches because he's not a fighter?
Kuhlman punched Gleason 3 times before Gleason dropped it. That's very true.
And they were such weak kitten punches.
He deserved to get knocked out.
So you guys have a problem?
No.
With Gleason dropping
him? Punch me 3 times. I'm going to knock you out, too.
Okay,
Richie's knocked me out, too, before.
Really? Yeah. What do you think about Ron Wilson contradicting his players and saying that it was that Gleason was okay with doing what he did?
Yeah, didn't he coach him in the American squad?
Probably.
At some point or another?
Yeah.
To American boys? No, I admire that. It's a surprising position because generally you go along with what your players say just because of the loyalty factor. But I appreciate the candidacy. You can't have it both ways, right? Get on Ron Wilson, for not being candid, but then say supporting his, he's right here, he's being candid. So you can't get on for supporting his players, because when you support his players, you're saying that he's not being candid.
You know, the Remus has the clip of the Kuhlman Gleason fight up on illegalcurve.com. Gleason one punches him, and then, to his credit, when he sees that Kuhlman goes down and that he's done damage, he could have hit him another time. But he saw it, he laid off, and he dropped
players
it immediately.
Players are pretty good about that, but Kuhlman deserved to get it.
He hit him in the head 3 times. I thought it was a lot of nothing from...
You know what this was, Drew? This was like sticking your finger in a fan. And I think everyone here has done that because it's a kind of a nice sensation. But it's kind of like...
What?
It's kind of like you...
I hear Remus laughing I can hear Remus laughing through the glass down the hall at one.
And it's also almost like tapping a lion on the shoulder. If you tap a lion on the shoulder, and it's sleeping, it might wake up.
Have you ever been close enough to tap a lion on his shoulder?
Tim Gleason was a sleeping lion who awoke and punched out Nikolai Kuhlman, and he got what he deserved in that case. I mean, hockey, fighting in hockey, and if you're going to...
Let's move on before Ezzy comes up with another amazing analogy. It was announced earlier this week that retired defenseman Rob Blake has joined the NHL Hockey Operations Department. While his role...
Yawn.
Simultaneous. We didn't even plan that one.
While his role was not...
I did the yawning sound, Ezzy. You said yawn. That's hilarious.
While his role was not specifically defined, he will be involved in the activities of the competition committee and the research and development camp.
Yeah, Drew, we don't get the NHL press releases, okay? So
he joins Brendan.
Drew, sorry we're not on Gary Bettman's mass email list.
Should I just scrap this question? Is that what you guys are saying?
Okay, toss number 3 in and get rid of number 2.
Fine, thank you. Appreciate you. You could have told me that off air.
I want to throw you right out.
Live air scrapping.
Craig Conroy cleared waivers earlier this week, and it is expected that this move will result in the end of his NHL career. Conroy's best year was in 2001-2002, when he had 75 points in 81 games.
With the St. Louis Blues.
No, with the Calgary Flames.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah. Was his success in 01-02 more so a result of playing with Jerome Iginla than anything specific Conroy did with his game?
Yeah, he did take on more of an offensive role. He was a two-way player in St. Louis. He took on more of an offensive role. Credit has to be given to him. And he was a very good passer. Not a great scorer, but a very good passer. Good two-way player, good skater. But obviously the product of most of his offensive success was that of playing beside Jerome Iginla, one of the best scorers of his time, and a guy who led the league in scoring during that time. But Conroy's overall ability to contribute in all aspects of the game, especially during that kind of 2001 to 2004 period, prior to going to LA and then going back to Calgary, during that four-year period, he was a very respectable, poor man's number one center or very good number two center.
Yeah, Richie, and
good solid career.
The offensive success that Conroy had obviously had a lot to do with playing with Jerome McGinley. He's one of the greatest scorers of all time.
Right.
But he's a very smart player, and he was
very smart.
He played well with top players, and you know he was able to get into the spots and you know adapt to whoever he was playing with.
That's right.
And
very
you know what, Conroy, it's unfortunate. You know, he's been a healthy scratch pretty much the season. It's unfortunate.
He's done.
But you know, at 39 years old, that's
good
that's
career.
A very good
money.
Career.
Made a lot of money.
Seventeen years. So. Yeah.
Drafted by the Habs way back when, I think a fifth or sixth round pick.
The Globe and Mail reported that 18 current and former NHL players have lost over $13 million total as a result of the failed Bear Mountain Golf Resort development. The development was spearheaded by former player Len Barry.
I thought he could only screw up the Lightning.
Who most recently owned the Tampa Bay Lightning with Oren Kulas. Where in the annals of terrible NHL owners does Len Barry land?
Oh, he's close to number one. He's like 1B? Who's 1A?
What about like, William Boots Del Baggio?
Well, I think 1A is the actual NHL itself because they own the team for 2 years now. But Del Boots Del Baggio, yeah, he's up there.
Harold Ballard.
I mean, some people throw McNall up there. Obviously, he had some problems. Yeah.
He wasn't a bad owner during his time, but after the fact,
money.
Yeah, you know, the jail thing was a little bit bad.
Didn't have the money.
I wrote an article.
Harold Ballard, Desi, that's good.
If Remus will pull it up on illegalcurve.com. I wrote an article for that for our site a while back. I think ranking the top 10 bad NHL owners.
It was
one of the more fun articles I've ever written.
Yeah, Ballard, Desi might be number one if you ask Leafs fans.
Yeah, but
at least Crington.
At least Ballard
had his problems, but the truth is he oversaw a very good success on the ice.
Yeah, I mean Barry, I don't think he'll be invited to any NHLPA reunions anytime soon.
I was at the draft two years ago, and
it's a good story.
Kulas and Kulas and Barry were like you know around the same area, but there wasn't two guys who were having a conversation. They only owned an NHL franchise together, but
they weren't talking to each other. I mean, you have to remember that Bettman had to step in to oversee the actual day-to-day runnings of that franchise.
So with this recent kind of news, does that make Len Barry the kind of what was the guy's name?
Yes.
The Ponzi scheme.
Oh, Madoff.
Madoff.
He's the Bernie Madoff of the hockey world, I guess.
No, I think he's just stupid.
And I think the players are even stupider for trusting him and giving him that much money. I mean, at some point in time, the risk, the buyer beware.
I saved my Brian Lawton story for another day.
Okay, well, the Brian Lawton, it was a good deli, though, wasn't
1988,
it?
First overall pick, I believe.
Yes, one pick ahead 88. Of...
85.
He went second in that year.
I forget Remus to check that. Was it 85 to 88, somewhere around there?
Yeah, he went first overall. He was his bus for the Minnesota North Stars.
Remus, while you're posting that article, you might as well post my article about hockey and rally when I was there a couple years ago.
I thought you were going to talk to Steve about that.
I was going to mention it.
Give the listeners a quick one.
A quick what?
Quick recap of that story.
I was in Raleigh at a baseball game in the sort of just before the start of the NHL season. I was at a Durham Bulls baseball game. We were leaving the game afterwards, and there was a table set up, a completely unmanned table that had these pink certificates on it that allowed anybody who wanted to grab as many certificates as they wanted, allowing them to purchase 2-for-1 tickets to Carolina Hurricanes hockey games, and not bad games. I'm talking about games against Pittsburgh,
Washington. The Habs were in there, too.
The Habs were in there, and there was nobody touching those tickets. Nobody was anywhere near those tickets. Well, I'm like, I couldn't believe it.
Mind-boggling.
It was absolutely amazing. I couldn't believe it. Moving on in rapid fire, Remus will post that article up there.
Yeah.
According to recently released figures among big-time sporting events, the Stanley Cup Finals have the highest percentage of viewers who make an annual income over $100,000.
I think... Let me quickly get into it. We're short of time.
Yeah, we're right up against it.
I think the truth is, Drew, is that people don't realize how expensive hockey is. And I think that might be a factor. And the people that are playing have a little bit more affluent because it's an expensive sport. It's not like basketball. It's not like baseball. It costs a lot of money, equipment, ice time. And kind of like golf, I'm assuming golf would probably be up there too in terms of how expensive it is to play on a consistent basis. Hockey's more expensive probably. And so that might be one of the main reasons for that.
Okay, so like you said, we're right up against it, we'll skip that one. Last question. Joe Robb, better known to most as the Leafs fan who threw waffles on the ice to protest the Leafs' poor play, escaped the long arm of the law after agreeing to do 5 hours community service in exchange for having...
That's going to the next Leafs game?
That's not community service. That's actually... That would be being sentenced to prison. Do you think, the long story short, do you think he should be allowed to attend events at the Air Canada Centre as he wishes, or do you think MLSE, Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, would be right in banning him from the arena?
I don't think he should be banned permanently. I think, let him sit out a year. I think that's enough. I mean, it was waffles.
If he got banned for a year and then came back in the first game back, he threw pancakes on the ice.
Not French toast?
French toast would be the year after.
After a two-year ban. Okay. Well, and all this talk about it made me hungry, so it's time to wrap up the show so we can go for breakfast. Tim, it's time for cheers and jeers.
Cheers and jeers.
Ezzy.
I'm going to cheer Craig Conroy. It's like he's probably going to retire now that he's cleared waivers. He had a great career. Probably the best quote in the NHL over the last, 10 years or so.
Yeah, one of the nicest guys out there.
Okay.
I'll echo that.
Cheers.
And I will jeer the pieces of garbage who, we didn't get much to talk. We didn't get to talking about this Jason Bailey claim. And I think the main issue here is the fact that people are still have that much hate and the anti-Semitic comments he had to endure as playing in the United States, playing anywhere, but the United States in this day and age. I mean, just absolutely absurd. And the fact that these guys haven't, said they're accountable and they want to change. They've just been silent. They've been in this recent All-Star game, ECHL All-Star game. Nothing's been done about it from the top down. And if these promises, if everything's true that was alleged, or even, some of the comments from the Anaheim Ducks about how they're going to take care of it and it wasn't taken care of, this is completely a black eye on everybody involved. It's a joke. And to have, people speaking out about it otherwise, taking the alternative point of view, I think there's some underlying hatred there then, too. There's no place for this in anywhere in society, in hockey or anywhere else. And it really is disturbing to read.
What I don't understand is how those coaches weren't fired as soon. I mean, the team obviously found evidence of it. Otherwise, they wouldn't have made them write the apologies.
What about the player and the team? Why don't you stand up for it? Why don't you do something about it?
This is
what about the owners? What about the GM? What about the Ducks?
Well, the Ducks are owned by Jewish people also.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to hope that the owners didn't know about it, but it is absolutely absurd that these guys weren't fired on the spot.
We should name them because I'd like to throw their names out there so they get the shame of it. And one of the guys was it Peterson and Raymond, right? Those are the two main guys.
Those are the head coaches.
Mark Peterson and Marty Raymond.
Yeah, and their apology letters, which you can find on LegalCurve.com, were actually laughable. I'm going to wrap up.
They definitely read them themselves.
Well, I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer our good friend Leah Hextall. Her new program starts here on Sports Radio 1290 Monday nights at 7 o'clock, amateur hour. So tune into that on Monday nights. Big thank you today on the Illegal Curve radio show to our guest, Steve Koulias of TSN. That's Hockey Tonight debuts on Tuesday.
TSN
Joshua
two.
On TSN 2. Joshua Cooper of the Tennessean in Nashville, Nashville Predators beat writer. And then Mike Greenlay of Fox Sportsnet, Minnesota color commentator for the Minnesota Wild. We thank them for joining us. This program will be available on iTunes in case you missed any of it. Go to iTunes.com and search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And until next Saturday morning here on Sports Radio 1290, we wish you good night and good luck. Stay tuned for the best in sports coverage throughout the globe.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk Saturday morning at 9, exclusively on Sports Radio 1290.